Blog Talk Radio.
Bonjour, darlings. Bonjour, mes amis. Ça va bien? Oh, I hope we're all ça va bien-ing tonight. Here it is. We're halfway through the month of September. I mean, truly, I don't know what the exact cutoff date is, and no one can agree with fall equinoxes and summer solstices, et cetera, et cetera. But fall definitely is on its way, and summer is definitely on her way out. I am indeed Sybil Brunson, and I am here in the heart of Manhattan, imagine, back home for a matter of hours. We are broadcasting to you, come now, don't sulk, live, actually live, can you imagine, from the top of the Chrysler Building. We're in the revolving ballroom of the Café Berlin, the beautifully glamorous Café Berlin here in the Chrysler Building with all the pointy windows. And the sky outside is beautiful, and the city below is gorgeous. And we had a special guest talking in Washington Square Park, right down Fifth Avenue. We'll get into that in just a second. But that was very exciting that she made an appearance here. I won't give it away. I'll let my producer, Gwendolyn Holden-Berry, break the news to all of you across the country and around the world who was speaking in Washington Square Park. We're brought to you tonight, of course, as always, by DaughtersOfIsis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. And I simply adore their motto. Don't you love when you have a motto? I've got to figure out a motto for my gravestone. I hope you'll all send in suggestions because I intend to die very soon. Again, DaughtersOfIsis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. You know something? I would put the fragrant memories of our ancestors on my gravestone, but when one is dead, one isn't very fragrant at all, at least in a nice way. Gwendolyn, how are you tonight?
Oh, I'm so happy. I just left Aunt Betsy in Washington Square Park. By far, Elizabeth Warren's best.
Isn't that great? Elizabeth Warren was in Washington Square Park, right down in the heart of Greenwich Village. Fifth Avenue ends right at the Washington Arch in Washington Square Park. What a great place for her to speak. And of course, I want you to break the news as to why that was significant. It's not the time of year, per se, that was the anniversary, but it's right around the corner from a significant incident historically at the beginning of the 20th century. It changed everything. Tell them what it was. Tell them, Gwendolyn.
You know, it's right around the corner from where the horrible tragedy of the Triangle Skirt Factory went up ablaze in 1911. And she was speaking, of course, her platform is about big structural change. And she did some storytelling at the very end that was just freaking fabulous, because what she did was she said, do you know who Frances Perkins was? She explained Frances Perkins was in a building someplace close when the bell started to ring, and she went out and she watched those women up on that top story on the ledge who were holding each other, and some were just plunging to their death. Frances Perkins got angry, she got mad, and she got with the unions, and she went to Albany, and she fought for unionization and working, and she worked with the governor, who was Roosevelt. Roosevelt became president. Who was the major engineer of the New Deal? Frances Perkins. And that's who she used as an example of what one woman can do. One woman can do who persists. And it was fabulous. She got even my pinko lefty buddies in that square to applaud her. I know it. I mean, when you work in the blue section, you meet all kinds of people with all kinds of ideologies. But one thing that is always a thrum throughout the Democratic Party that's unions. And she really hit it out of the park. She was wonderful.
Well, wouldn't it be significant if she ended up being the first woman president, because Frances Perkins was the first woman to serve in the cabinet. And
right.
This is back when it was unheard of for women to even be congressmen or senators. So she was totally a trailblazer. And for all of Franklin Roosevelt's failings and whatever we can put, just as we do with Lincoln, you know, the things that he got wrong and the things that he didn't do quite well enough. And, you know, he was a philanderer and he was, you know, cheating on his wonderful wife and everything. For all the things he did wrong, every once in a while, Franklin Roosevelt did something extraordinary. And putting Frances Perkins in the cabinet, especially as the Secretary of Labor. I mean, let's be honest. I'm a union person myself. I'm a member of several unions. But I must tell you, back then, unions were shorthand for thugs. They happened to be pro-labor thugs. But these were not mostly college-educated, effete, you know, intellectuals like Woodrow Wilson and Franklin Roosevelt and Teddy Roosevelt. Yes. These were a bunch of rough guys with dirty fingernails. And even at the top offices of the unions, they were thugs. They were rough-hewn people who still are. So for Frances, as a woman, you can imagine the shock that Franklin Roosevelt put this woman in charge of all of these Teamsters and AFL-CIO and United Auto Workers, all of these people. She was reacting, though, to the fact that she saw 146 women and children, young children.
Yeah.
There were a handful of men in there. There were a few men, but it was mostly 146 women. And it was also they were mostly immigrants, who were working in a sweatshop situation, and they were locked into their floors of the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory building. It wasn't called that building at that time. And they were stuck when a fire broke out. And the ones that didn't jump, which was merciful, as horrifying as it is to think of, the ones that got off easy were the ones who got to jump, because what they found inside was shocking. When the fire was finally extinguished,
It was horrifying.
There were piles of corpses up against the doors, which had either opened inwards or were locked, because that's what foremen and managers of companies did. They didn't want their employees going out for bathroom breaks or to have a cigarette or a coffee break. So they simply locked the doors until it was lunchtime or dinner time. When you think of that, and of course, and no one paid. The owners of the company did not pay any penalties for what they had done. So
they built it up, thought they'd be doing it again. But here's the thing too, Mommy. One persistent woman, out of that came weekends, child labor laws, Social Security, Medicare. Finally, she was the one who started the push towards Medicare.
Exactly.
I mean,
she was galvanized by that entire thing. She was galvanized by that experience, and she
changed her whole life. Yes, right now, we're all going through that kind of galvanization. All we have to do is put our phones up. You know, we get it every day.
The other thing I want to mention is that the beginning of the 20th century was kind of a logical, logical continuation of the 19th in terms of it being a century of it sort of was the Enlightenment after. It was Enlightenment plus. It was where people began to think larger thoughts than the thoughts of, you know, the old world. So in other words, for instance, novels were being written like The Jungle. You know, people were beginning to care about health, about food, about city life, about immigration, about the abuse of people in the middle class and especially the lower class. One particular interesting – I love history, as you all know. The Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire took place on March 25th
1911, almost a year to the day later, almost a year. It was actually April of 1912, was the Titanic, which was the ocean-going version of the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory, in which thousands of people died, mostly immigrants and lower-class people who could not get to lifeboats and were trapped on the Titanic, while millionaires, piled into the few lifeboats there were. And actually, lifeboats were set adrift from the Titanic, half full, not with 10 people in them, things like that, while hundreds of people were on the ship drowning. And of course, this, it seemed like it was going to be okay. And what ended up happening was the backlash against the money class and the privileged was enormous. There were people who survived the Titanic who went into hiding and never came out again because they were so mortified at the injustice and the horror of the fact that children drowned on the Titanic horribly. And while millionaires were floating around with bottles of champagne in lifeboats thinking that it was an outing, it's just shocking. And so this is the beginning of that sort of thing.
There were a few gentlemen that stayed and helped women get on it that had bank accounts. Astor was one. There were a few. And it really did. As
Archibald
Mother
Gracie,
would say,
there were a few.
Yeah, as Mother would say, it really separated the wheat from the chaff. It really did.
I happen to live, as many of you know, such a coincidence, such a weird coincidence. I live up here on 105th and West End in New York City, and right down the block, I can see it from my bay window. When I'm in my bay window and looking out, on a snowy evening, I live right down the street from Strauss Park, and Strauss Park is the park that was commemorated by the children of the Strausses, who were the owners and managers of Macy's, and they lived right across the street on 105th and West End, between Broadway and West End. Their mansion was there, and their entire, the entire city block was theirs, and they had a mansion much like the Frick mansion, and they died. It was Strauss and his wife. She's the one who decided to stay with her husband. He said, "You get into the boat," and she said, "No, we've lived together all these years. I'm going to stay with you." And she, of course, even though they were elderly, they both died. And so the children of the Strausses were so stunned and heartbroken that their parents died that when word came back the morning after the Titanic, the children resolved to sell the mansion and the grounds, and they got rid of it. They felt they couldn't live there. And it was later turned into the Sherborne, I believe it is the name of the building across the street. I have to look at it. The Claiborne. And it's a beautiful apartment building there now. And the Strausses were commemorated. Their children built little Strauss Park there on the intersection between Broadway and West End. It's lovely.
That was character. That was a quality of character, for them to stand by and know that death was imminent and to say, "I'm staying with you, and the young people will go ahead of us." The women.
I think that is a credible character. And if by any chance, and I make this promise now to my listeners at home, and I make this promise to the DaughtersOfISIS.com company and to its board of directors, in the event that this show does not get better ratings and is canceled, I will stand beside my wonderful producer, Gwendolyn Holden Berry, even as our tiny ship upends and begins to go under. I shall, as Sybil Brunson, continue to stand by her, even as we begin to under the water of the Hudson River. I will promise to stand by her as she has stood by me in times of stress. So
Mommy,
I just want my home audience to know that.
Mommy, you do know I am a Class A vessel captain. You know that, right? True.
I do know that.
I can put 65 foot of deck underneath my hand. Yes. I don't think the ship's going down, honey.
We
may run aground here and there, but I promise If we run aground, it'll be near a very decent bar rail.
All right. I want to mention a couple of things. We're here, in case you just tuned in. Come Now, Don't Sulk. Our broadcast is coming to you. We are part of the Here Be Monsters network on Blog Talk Radio. I want you to think at home of the Here Be Monsters network as the MGM of Blog Talk Radio. And I am lucky enough with my Come Now, Don't Sulk to be a member of a late coming member of their family and their team. Again, our sponsors are daughtersofisis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. Daughtersofisis.com is all one word. Do run during the broadcast. Open up another window, and you can check out their line of products. I want to remind you that you can all call in, and our phone number here at the switchboard is 323-784-9639. Pull out your Crayola crayons and write down 323-784-9639. We are taking calls, and tonight I want our subject to be saying goodbye. You saw the little ad that I posted on Facebook and Twitter tonight of it's the end of summer, and that was Mummy with one of her sisters and one of her best friends putting their toes into the ocean many, many years ago at the end of summer. How do we say goodbye to things we love? How do we move on? Last week, we talked about things that we love and that we would run into a fire to rescue. How do we hold on to things that are dear to us? And, you know, what do we cherish and when do we resolve how to cherish it? Well, this week it's about how do we say goodbye? Because as you know, I'm a gardener, and my garden, which I post Tourette's about all the time, you all compliment me on it. It's always painful at this time of year to start saying goodbye to my garden. Things are no longer blooming, but even more shocking and sad is the fact that some things bloom now, and yet we all know that the cold weather is coming. So, you know, and my little praying mantis will be gone, and my bees will be gone, and the butterflies are going to be gone. How do we say goodbye? So that's our topic tonight. Call in again. Our phone number is 323-784-9639. And while we're waiting for a call, I'm going to throw it back to Gwendolyn, because I am on the wonderful daughtersofisis.com website, and I was looking up all the different products. They have mists and sprays and incense and essential formulas and candles and soaps, and they have crystal and gemstone essences and roll-ons. I wanted to just ask about the roll-ons, because I'm there now, and these look wonderful. You've got a money roll-on, you've got the Pure Love, you've got the Lakshmi. I love Lakshmi. Tell us just a little bit about the roll-ons. Let's mention one. What's one that you recommend tonight to the home audience?
Well, you were talking about how you would say goodbye, and culture is my bag, and the traditions of our ancestors, especially spiritually, but spirit is a way of life anyways. It's who you are. And the Maya, the classic Maya, had a saying. The saying was in Lakesh, Alakin, but in Lakesh, and it means I am another yourself. And I think right now, with everything that we've gone through, and I've come up with this scent, this blend in Lakesh. And my mom always used to say to me, when you lose something or you lose somebody, the best thing you can do is go make a new friend. And we all need to remember right now kindness more than anything else, I think. And in Lakesh is a scent that is a happy, bright scent that is modeled after the I am another yourself. And it's nice to know that you can turn anywhere when you least expect it, and you'll meet somebody new. And yeah, it's an opportunity to make a new friend. You do it all the time, Mommy. I see it on your Tourette's. You talk about it. Oh, the driver you had in Minnesota the one time that became your pal. When we're sad, when we're grieving, when we lose something, make a new friend.
Yep. Well, apropos of that, that was wonderful for you to say that. And I, yeah, there's, I urge you all to go to daughtersofisis.com and look at the products there. And what I love about the company and about their products is that it's not just about fragrances or perfumes or essential oils. It's about expanding our minds, our experiences, and our psyches and our feelings and interactions with the universe around us using our senses. Of course, the visual sense, eyesight is about what 70% of what we observe and learn and operate on. But our other senses, hearing, smell, taste, touch, these are all significant. And the sense of smell cannot be underestimated at all. It is,
it's how we wake.
First of all, I'm sorry, what?
It's how we wake to consciousness. We smell and taste mother and father in the womb. That's how our memories begin to build.
There you go. See, that's, I was hoping you would say that, Gwendolyn. We, for the skeptics out there, for the skeptics out in the audience who are like, you know, they say, oh, well, Zodiac and astrology and, you know, New Age and Age of Aquarius, and you got your smells and your perfumes, and, you know, Old Spice is fine for me. But, you know, and when I fell on hard times, I used to drink Aqua Velva in an alleyway because it was cheap. You know, they... So they talk about that. But one thing that's very significant is that when you were in your mother's body, you were the only senses you had were the ones that were what was being pumped through your body. And at that point, your sense of taste and smell were much more active than your sense of sight, certainly, because you were in absolute blackness. And there was sound, but it was muffled. What?
It's actual science. We actually,
yes.
Our consciousness begins when we begin, when our senses awaken, and the first senses, the scent and taste are intimately intertwined. and when we, our awakening happens as we taste and smell mother and father, and we do that in the womb. We also hear. We do hear in the womb.
Yes, we do. I was about to say that. We do hear, but it's muffled. You know,
Yeah, and it comes after that, you know, the baby moved. The baby tasted. The baby that smelled. And it is our sensuality that builds our memories that hold our consciousness.
One thing I wanted to mention.
Old Spice.
You
remind me of an old uncle. You know, if I smell Old Spice, someone comes to mind. And it sends, awakens memories fast. And
yes,
holds,
absolutely.
Anchors them. Yeah.
I was about to say that the cynics in the audience, you know, the most cynical people I've ever known, still have a strong, very powerful, sense memory when they smell things like cinnamon, cloves, and orange. It's funny. I have even Jewish friends who say, oh, that's the smell of Christmas. they immediately say, oh, that's the smell of Christmas. When I smell oranges and cloves or orange and cinnamon, I mean, it's Christmas. And it is funny how certain smells are certain holidays, are certain events, and there's even group smell things like that where people say, oh, you'll find so many people will immediately identify the holiday season with oranges and cinnamon and cloves,
you know,
and orange.
It works with music too. I know a lady who's a bit older than me, but every time she smells jasmine, she thinks of Joni Mitchell because there was all this jasmine incense at her concert.
Oh, that's interesting.
Well, you know, I can remember the smell of, I don't know, you would know better than I do. They dry clean costumes in the theater, correct?
Yes.
they yeah. use certain and brushes and little vacuums and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And there's one scent, and I smelled it, and I mentioned it to an actor that I was with, and she turned to me and she said, "Honey, that's the smell of the theater. That's the scent
yeah.
of that is the scent of performance right there, you know." And
yeah.
I thought, "Wow, wow." That's right. That would be to many, many people in your profession.
It's so funny how that works. Well, let's be honest. You know, billions of dollars are made every fall on the smell of, quote, pumpkin spice. Look at Starbucks released pumpkin spice coffees early this year because they knew they could make a killing off it. And, of course, they took all sorts of comic heat about it because they had released the first pumpkin spice beverages like 3 weeks ago when it was still 90 degrees. Well, let's be honest. I just got back from Memphis and Nashville last night. And it was 98 degrees there, and Starbucks was serving pumpkin spice hot,
oh
by
my.
The way, pumpkin oh spice my. Coffees already. And we had a big laugh about it. I went to the same Starbucks every morning, you know, to start the day and pick up my blueberry scone and everything. And we were all laughing there, the staff and the customers, at the fact that they were serving hot pumpkin spice coffees, you know, while it was 98
correct.
Degrees and people's cars were melting outside.
Correct.
So.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but you did a tourette that brought me, because I've walked through there before, but with all the candies on the shelf, where were you
oh.
in the drugstore?
Schwab's. A. Schwab's on Beale Street.
On Beale Street. Now, I've been through there, and if it was that hot out, you can't tell me there wasn't a candy, a specific candy scent that you got walking through there.
Well, no. Inside, it was air conditioned with an inch of its life. With all of that, they've become, although I can't imagine what it was like back, you know, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, but and
watch
all the way
it.
Back into the 1800s.
Watch it, sister.
But,
wow.
Well, because
you're giving
there was
my
no,
age out.
but they didn't have air conditioning up until like fairly recently, which is really startling. So it's just it. But the soda fountain part of it, I always rave about
the smell
tree.
Of the candy. I remember
yes.
the smell of the candy. I do,
yes.
honestly.
And they have like 8,000 brands of candy there.
They do.
It's wonderful.
They do. It was just wow. What a snap back in time that was. And I
want to. Yeah,
wow.
I'm every time I do a tourette there, I try to film a little bit more of the little details in there. I've got to tell you something. I did it again this time. The hat section where they sell hats, the hats are sitting on little hat trees, carved
yeah.
hat trees, different wooden ones, glass ones, metal ones, that date from the 1800s and 1910s and 20s. They are original. There are fixtures all over the place in the store that are museum pieces. It's just astounding. So along with the bacon Band-Aids, you know, from Archie McPhee, and you know the cockroach roach clips, and all the different things that I was trying to show you, there's like 10,000 products. You can buy ukuleles on the second floor. You can buy Jew's harps and harmonicas. There's so many things there that are bizarre and funny. But mixed in, most people don't even notice that the cabinets that things are displayed in are from 1850, 1890, 1880. It's
they
just extraordinary. And I can't tell you how much, having traveled all over the United States, having been in 25 states last year, in a matter of 5 months alone. I went to 25 states in 5 months. So, you know, I was in a total of about 30 states last year and this year already.
Wow.
The number of cities that no longer have a Beale Street or even an A. Schwab's drugstore, the country is eviscerating itself. And New York has given up its heritage as a place of magic or wonder. The only magic in New York is the fact that they're building taller and taller George Jetson buildings on top of each other. What was magical and special and Beale Street-y about New York City and about Greenwich Village is mostly gone. There's almost nothing left. Apropos of which, the White Horse Tavern was bought by some developer, and everyone is in doubt about whether it's even going to – they can't tear the building down unless, of course, they accidentally on purpose burn that building to the ground. It's one of the rare wooden buildings still remaining in Greenwich Village. But it's the city is finished, and I hope that Memphis understands and preserves Beale Street all the way down, all the city blocks of it. It's like about five blocks. I hope that they preserve that and that no Rudy Giuliani there decides to dumpsterize it and sterilize it the way he did with Times Square. Is Times Square safer? Is it cleaner? Blah, blah, blah. Yes. But you have giant Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse and Donald Ducks running around with, you know, Koreans inside them, you know, making, you know, $25 a photo. Because they pose with tourists who often don't want to be posed with a Mickey Mouse or a Minnie Mouse or a Goofy. I mean, there's getting to be assault charges in these situations where suddenly, you know, they're arresting, the police are running up and arresting someone who can't speak English and is posing as Daffy Duck. You know, it's like, what is going on? And they have completely Disneyized and dumpsterized Times Square, and this is Giuliani's doing. So I just want to make sure that the people, I try always to encourage all of you at home to go visit magical things, museums, and interesting sites that are rare and can't be duplicated. There's no Starbucks on Beale Street, folks. There's no Duane Reade on Beale Street. You want your Starbucks, you got to walk a few blocks, you know, three south or north or whatever. You got to walk away because there is none of that on Beale Street. And, you know, Omaha has a whole old market district. There's no Starbucks there. There's no mass-produced Walmart-y thing there. Go see these things. Before we get any farther, I know we don't have a phone call yet, but I want to read something because I'm glad we talked about what we did, Gwen. But I want to talk to you. Our original concept for the show tonight was on saying goodbye. Last season, you know that we got very political, and half of you adored a third of you loved us getting political. And you loved that Mummy and Gwendolyn became Madame Defarge's on the air. Another third of you hated it and wanted us to talk about brownie recipes and flour arranging, and we did that on occasion. And another third of you complained, but never called in, and only private messaged me and never let us know what you wanted, but you just fussed. You fussed the weeks that we did the political stuff, and you fussed the weeks that we did the brownie recipe stuff. But you never called in and tried to guide the program, and I've encouraged you all to always call in because we will, you know, adjust the program. I'm going to read you something very brief. I actually wrote it. Thank goodness. You know, Facebook does wonderful things, and they once in a while do really stupid things. But one of the things they do that I think is lovely is they remind you of where you were a year ago today, or 3 years ago today, or 8 years ago today. So you open your Facebook page in the morning with over your coffee, and there it is. They've said, oh, we just want to remind you that this is what you did last year or 5 years ago or whatever, and it's on this date, et cetera, et cetera. And this morning I opened my page, and it's, by the way, George Bresch's birthday, my husband.
Yes, happy
22
birthday.
Years. Yeah, 22 years, and it's his birthday. And He, by the way, for all of you that are wondering, he is 22 years old. I married him as a fetus because he doesn't like me to give away his age. So there you go. Yes. No, I did not get George off a milk carton. That would already indicate that he was at least 30. So George was a fetus. As a matter of fact, he was still in his mother's womb. He was the third trimester, so he wasn't premature. But I brought him out of his mother and then married him on the spot in the gynecological wing of New York Hospital. Anyway, back to this. They reminded me that a year ago today, on George's birthday in 2018, I had found a they showed me a photograph of a praying mantis that I had just put on the deck of the little house that we, the little studio cottage that we have out on Fire Island that we rent instead of taking vacations. We decided that we would rent a little place out there and go there on weekends that we could manage it. And I wrote this apropos of this, and you'll understand when I say it, when I read it. It's very short. The photograph, if you're wondering what the photograph is and you're on your computer, you can go to my Facebook page on any one of them, the Lollipop Guild, or on my page, and you can see a cute little praying mantis posing on a white enameled deck shed cover. And I wrote this. Was this only a year ago, September 16th, 2018? So I'm starting to pack up our little place in Cherry Grove for the season, and we're rushing around the house, figuring out what goes where and when, and a giant shadow appears on the curtain to the deck. Now, you all know how Mummy can be disturbed, shall we say, by large bugs jumping out and surprising her, often deliberately and even with some malice. But it was immediately clear that this shadow was that of a praying mantis, the only one I had seen all season. And there he or she was inside my house on the curtain, where it would have starved to death while we were gone this week, especially because I had just cleaned out the refrigerator. Imagine. And I'm known for being a thoughtful hostess too. I would have returned and found a house guest, invited or not, dead on the floor. I mean, that sort of thing just isn't done. My mother taught me so. So here is my little interloper, carefully, quote unquote, invited out onto the deck where he or she can decide the best hunting is. I feel so blessed to have seen this little soul in the very last leg of the season and to have rescued it out of the house and into the bright sunshine where its journey can continue. I can't begin to tell you how loaded this little event is for me. But those of you that know me know how seriously and deeply I feel about flowers, trees, animals, and all of nature, and how I'm trying more and more as I get older to honor and cherish them in this increasingly callous and destructive world. Enough said. Go out into this bright, beautiful day, little being. How lucky and honored I am to have seen you and rescued you in the nick of time so that your journey can continue in whatever way it may. You have changed my life as much or more than I have changed yours. I will never forget you, and I will always be grateful.
That's wonderful.
When that came up today, I was just thunderstruck, because every smell and sound of that day was there, vivid and bright and beautiful on that afternoon. And all of the feelings, all of the stuff that I felt from, I was laughing and crying because I remember that I was rushing around and I saw through the curtain, this, we have white canvas curtains, this enormous shadow on there. And I knew immediately it was a bug. And I yelled to George, I went, oh my God, there's a bug. There's a huge bug on the curtain. And of course, he's not afraid of bugs. He's afraid of mice and possibly snakes. I'm not afraid of those things. But bugs often surprise me and dismay me. And I went to the curtain and I shook it gently because I try not to kill bugs, even if I'm terrified of them. And there was a praying mantis on the other side, clinging to the curtain, wondering why some idiot was shaking the curtain. And I was just swept away. I went and got a Chinese food container, plastic Chinese food container, and carefully placed it over it so I didn't hurt the praying mantis. And then I just guided it into it and opened the sliding door and put it out on the deck upstairs on that shed cover. And there it was, basking in the sun. And I there was a little water on the deck too, on the cover, the shed cover. There was water from the morning. I think it had rained the night before, so I knew there was water there for it to drink. And it was, you know, it could reorient itself, and it then could fly into the trees that hang right over our deck. I mean, there's lots of foliage there. I also had flowers planted up there. There was any number of places that that praying mantis could go. And I remember just being overwhelmed and so grateful that I had found it and that it did not die in my house during the week that we were gone, because we went on a business trip right after that. I was, every emotion came over me, and I laughed and cried in spite of myself. I just hope that we all learn every day, as I learn. I have to learn every day. I am not speaking to you as a great a teacher or a great spiritual guide. I am speaking to you as just another schlunk who stumbles through life, wonders what it's all about, you know, stumbling with my little candle lit against the darkness, trying to figure out what this is all about. And that's why every time I finish a Tourette, I usually say, remember to be, you know, present, be mindful, and be grateful, those three separate things, so that when, I'm trying not to get tearful, so that when it is time to say goodbye, whether it's the goodbye today to your favorite dish that your grandmother left you and you broke it in the sink, or goodbye to the flowers that you planted this year in the garden, or goodbye to a dog or a kitty that you love more than anything in the world, or goodbye to a relationship with someone who you loved but the relationship has evolved, or goodbye to a job, goodbye to a house, goodbye, the ultimate goodbye, which is waiting for all of us, that you can do it with grace and with some measure of peace, you know, and that you're not sitting there like Peggy Lee singing, "Is that all there is? Is that all there is?" I love that song. I intend to put it in my next nightclub act.
Mommy,
I have to
tell you, it should come as no shock to you either, that the spiritual or totem symbology of the praying mantis is stillness and patience. It takes its time. It blends with the earth, its colors, and it takes care to pay diligent attention to its surroundings and moving through life at its own pace. Its achievements are peace and harmony. So that really, what you wrote about that praying mantis is exactly what that praying mantis was beaming out to you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for saying that and for telling me that. On the other hand, my dear friend Lee Gannon is a vegan, and she probably is very angry with both Mummy and the praying mantis that neither of us are vegetarians and vegans, because I caught a praying mantis this summer in my liatris, in my gay feathers, munching away cheerfully on a moth that was still quite alive, and I found it very disconcerting. And I was torn between being glad that a baby praying mantis was taking care of itself and had figured out how to go shopping, and on the other hand, sorry for the beautiful moth that was, fortunately I couldn't hear it screaming, but it was definitely in horrible distress because it was being eaten alive and killed by this baby praying mantis. By the way, the moth was like twice the size of the praying mantis. It was just like, oh no. I felt like I was, you know, in the movie The Fly from 1953 with Vincent Price and Herbert Marshall, and poor David Hedison as the half fly, half man being eaten by a spider. It was like, oh no, no, my garden has become a chamber of horrors.
The perfect yin and yang.
I started to think, well, I used to think it was a garden by the Fire Island, and now it's become the wax museum, and I should be Vincent Price in a wheelchair, wheeling around, watching each of the hideous tableaus of, here we have Anne Boleyn being beheaded, here we have Joan of Arc being burned to death, oh, and here we have a butterfly being killed by a praying mantis. Horrible, horrible. Anyway, well, no one is calling in. I don't know what's going on. I guess no one wants to talk about saying goodbye. What do you do when you, Gwendolyn, what do you do
when something comes
to an end?
You know, well, not going to a person, but a place instead, because there's not enough mops in the house. But when we sold the family home, the realtor I worked with was a good gal, and she hired a limo and had a bucket of champagne, you know, champagne in there for me and all of that stuff.
Right.
Because it was a very difficult thing for me to do. And saying goodbye was really hard. So she wanted to make it easy on me. And we ended up down the road at one of your local public houses. And I met a new bartender and I made a friend. And no kidding, really, making a new friend who coincidentally knew who I was because he knew my mom, you know? And it, making a friend has always been, and it's probably because most of my younger life, I was very solitary. I felt like an outsider in many circumstances in school and such. And, you know, I had a best friend, but I never was part of any clique or crowd, that kind of thing. And you do develop some issues around those things. And making a new friend has always been a real balm, a real salve for me.
Right.
So that's what I will reach for. Even just somebody in the checking line getting out of the grocery store during, you know, the hurry for the hurricane get up, you know, we're all there buying everything and, you know, conversation strikes up. Oh, well, I live here. Well, I live there. Well, glad to know you.
Right.
You know, just, I think what it really is being with people in a sincere and honest way takes you out of yourself.
Yes. Yes. I am. It's funny, as an Aquarius and as a person born in the year of the dragon, I'm supposed to be very comfortable with change. Both dragons and Aquarians are supposed to be, oh, at the forefront of change and, you know, evolution and new adventures, et cetera, et cetera. And that is very much me. I love meeting new people. I am fearless in many ways. My performance history is getting out on stage unscripted and being able to MC entire events and juggle all sorts of people and characters on stage and do it all, you know, free and easy at blah, blah, blah. However, interestingly, I have tremendous problems with, as I've said before, possessions of being linked to objects. I have strong, it's not that they're expensive objects. I have strong, strong feelings about the spirit, the soul inside an object, whether it's an antique or it's something I found or something that was given to me as a gift. I have extremely strong attachments, very similar to what the Japanese and the Chinese talk about, especially the Japanese. Well, the Chinese too. They believe that not only are plants alive that have spirits, but they believe that objects have spirits, that that an object is filled with its history and with the people who've owned and touched it and made it and cherished it. I feel that. And so consequently, I'm someone who I would wear rags and have a beautiful home, rather than have an ordinary home, like live in a hotel room and have beautiful clothes. I am someone who's I'm very attached to each of the things in my apartment, in my home. I look at them, they each have stories for me. Consequently, through just fate, George and I have spent the last 22 years, we have moved many, many times in New York because rent stabilization ended. And we have had to move because homes have been condoed underneath us, or the real estate has actually been bought and sold away and torn down. We have actually lost some homes, not only to condoing or to rents tripling, but literally we have a couple of situations where the buildings are gone. So that's the age of Giuliani. and Bloomberg. That is the age of no rent stabilization, no protection. And so every time our lease comes up, we sometimes have had to move. And I cannot begin to tell you how painful that has been on that last day when the movers have taken the boxes out. And I've done everything in the book. Everything in the book. I have tried to make it okay by looking at the empty floor and the three dust bunnies and the box we never got around to using that's empty and lying on the floor and saying, well, but what I am and who I am and the things that I love are coming to the new place with me. Yes, that's true. My favorite things and my pictures with George and with family and friends, those candlesticks, that particular chair, those lamps, those are all coming with me, yes. But the space itself is filled with it. I can't use the word memories. It's bigger and deeper and wider and more
it's
profound
sacred.
Than that.
It's
and
sacred.
When, yes, sacred. And when I have said goodbye to these places, I have been devastated. And I am thinking of two in particular that I remember the day that I left and knowing that that structure was going to be gone, that the actual structure itself would be gone, that no other tenant was moving into that place, that beautiful, I'm thinking of a beautiful little townhouse on West 11th Street, right down by the Hudson River, built in 1836, was built in 1836 when Andrew Jackson was president, and it was a little fisherman's cottage. When that building came down, that building was going to be torn down and replaced by a McMansion, for some Wall Street person. I was devastated to know that and feel that. It was interesting. That night, we left at 4 or 5 o'clock that afternoon. That was the final move. The movers took the last boxes. Everyone left. Our friends left. George left. And I was left in the building, and I said goodbye, my own private little goodbye, and then raced to our new apartment, which was 4 blocks away, for $1,000 more a month. And that was like 7 years ago, so that was just shocking. Our rent had been increased by, a third, and more than a third. And I had to perform that night. I was doing a fundraiser. And so I had to race and get into makeup and get into my costume and put my props together and tuck everything into the canvas bags and do and get in a cab and run to the location where we were doing a fundraiser for a great organization. And I was on stage, and typically the sadder I am, or the more heartbroken, or the more angry, the better I am. By the end of the show, people came up to me at the end and said, "Oh God, Mummy, you were so fabulous. Oh my God, my face hurts." That's the ultimate compliment. My face hurts from laughing. We raised great money that night. It was a wonderful evening. And I hailed a cab and made the mistake of going back to my old building. I just said the old address without thinking. And 372 West 11th Street. And the cab was going along, and the cab did not – I was sitting there looking out, thinking about the show, about what things coming up, about George, about all the things. And then suddenly the cab made a wrong turn, and we were turning. And it was, wait a minute, we're coming up to a building that was all black, a little four-story building that was all dark because the other tenants had already moved out. And there we were. And I chuckled in spite of myself through my tears and apologized and said, "Driver, I'm sorry. Can you make a turn around this corner and drive me to Greenwich, to Washington Street and West 10th? And I went to my new home and carried all my stuff upstairs to my new apartment. And that was a goodbye. And it was weird to be performing on a night when one of the most sweet and beautiful homes I have ever lived in was gone. And sure enough, after a short amount of time, the wrecking balls came and the building began to be torn down. And I watched it. I went, and watched it day by day as the wrecking crew demolished it floor by floor. And I was devastated.
Did you take, I've traveled to a lot of sacred sites in my life. It's been part of my journey, part of my job. I've collected soil and actually gotten oil from it. different places all over the planet, but it's my practice. I ask first, I ask the earth, I ask the ancestors, and I will pick up a stone or something that calls to me. And that's why old gals like me wear what we call a medicine bag. You put it in your bag, it's your memory. I'm wondering, right. Do you ever, you know, take a brick or something like that?
Yes, I have. I have done that. I have not done it. I didn't do it way back in the past as much as I should have, but I have things that are very meaningful to me from these different sites. And, you know, I have photographs, of course, of being in those places. And it is interesting how a photograph, when you hear that people say their photographs were lost in a fire or a flood.
That's devastating.
That cannot be underestimated. I've known people who lost a diamond ring worth thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, but they got the photographs out, and that meant more to them than the expense of like something extraordinary, even something that is sentimental and expensive, like grandma's ring. They'd rather have the pictures of grandma than the ring. It's interesting how our eyesight, our visual, our ability to look at a piece of paper that is yellowing and getting crackly and old, but it has an image on it, means everything to us. It really is shocking. And
get your Kodak. Get your Kodak. Yeah. That used to be the saying, you know, a long time ago. People would say, get your Kodak. And I have photographs of my father's family and my mother's family that are really old. I've taken care of them because I was a photographer for years. And I've taken very good care of them. But and I've digitized some, put some on my Facebook page. It's the silver nitrate begins to show, you know.
Oh, yeah, completely.
I actually have a tintype of a great-great-grandfather. And it's amazing what you're saying is.
Yeah.
The other thing that sort of tandemly goes over that, and now, of course, everybody can video so much, and that's wonderful too. I saw the only video, and this is VHS, one of the neighbors from where my mom had a summer home up in the mountains of North Carolina videoed my mom walking down the street in her red house coat chasing her little dogs. She was saying, come here, you little bastards. And it was, you know, up in the mountains on a river, and that was the only film of my mom that there was.
Oh.
And that I saw it like, 5 years. Oh my God, we're at the end of the show.
I know. I was about to tell you. Listen, folks, I just want to remind you, we're at the end of a show and we're reminiscing here. Listen, this has been Come Now, Don't Sulk, part of the Here Be Monsters Network. Our sponsor, of course, was and always is DaughtersOfIsis.com. Check their website out. You can find Mummy, Sybil Brunson, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And you can also find us at SybilSays.com, SybilBrunson.com. And I hope you will join me there. I'm putting all sorts of new writing there and stories. I know most of you aren't reading Mummy stuff, but if you ever do feel like reading, go there. All the stories are posted. We're going to be here again Monday, 8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, which will be changing soon. But we will be back here, and I hope you'll join Gwendolyn and me next Monday night, 8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, 7 Central, or your corresponding time zone. Good night, Gwendolyn. I love you.
Yeah, I love you. Good night, Mommy.
See you all next week. Bye-bye.